And joining me now from ESPN Radio, from MSG Networks, also on the Inside the Green Room podcast with Danny Green, it is Harrison Sanford. Harrison, appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining the show today.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. It's always good to talk to the fans of Toronto. I've grown a big time love for the city, and so has Danny. So whenever we have the opportunity to talk to the fans in Toronto, we definitely try to.
Yeah, and by the way, like Danny Green, it didn't take him long to get really good at the media thing and the broadcaster thing. Like, you know, I think of him and like JJ Redick as guys who I'm like, wait a minute, weren't you just suiting up and just does a fantastic job?
Yeah, no, well, we owe a lot of it to the city of Toronto. I mean, when we started the podcast, at that time, my media career was hit a roadblock, and Danny hadn't had any reps as a media personality. And the city really embraced us, and now you see where Danny is now, to where he had an active contract with ESPN while he was still playing. And things for me have definitely been on an uptick. So
that's great.
Trust me when I say we are internally grateful for the city of Toronto and everybody who listened to our podcast while we were in town.
Beyond the times when I got to drive through the city, every other time I appreciate the city as well, except when I'm in my car. Okay, so you know what? Let's talk about your podcast for a second, Danny Green, because there's one story I'd love if you could sort of expand to the audience just about Danny Green talking about Joel Embiid, who won the MVP, and just what lessons can the current MVP learn from Jokic, the finals MVP?
Yeah, so Danny elaborated on that in our last episode after watching Nikola Jokic win finals MVP. What he was basically trying to get across is that what Joel has done throughout the course of his career has always gotten better individually with his skills, but he has to take some leaps and bounds in terms of being a better teammate. Not to say that he was a bad teammate, but empowering the other guys on the team to fulfill their basketball destinies, allow them to have confidence going into a game or going into a series and building the habits from game one, from training camp, that would allow the team to be its best when it really matters. Like, for example, if you go back to the times when Ben Simmons was there and then he left, all of a sudden Joel Embiid would say, I'll bring up the ball now. I'll shoot three-pointers. I'll do this. I'll do that to make up for Ben Simmons' loss, when in actuality, maybe the more impactful thing would have been to say, hey, you know, shake Milton, here you go, take the ball, you bring it up the court. Hey, Tyrese Maxey, you bring the ball up the court, you take this shot here. Joel, because he's so talented, because he's so prideful, maybe took up too much of the workload for the team and didn't necessarily allow the other players to be the best version of themselves. And those type of things matter when you're trying to get through different playoff series and eventually be a champion.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it is the highest level of being that true superstar. Can you make everyone else around you better? You can win someone in their fantasy basketball league. You can win individual accolades. But we saw it with Jokic, where he was often at his best when he was taking 12 shots. And that's the hardest thing to do. And that is the last part of the journey for Joel Embiid, because that is something that every now and then he's been lacking, especially in the postseason.
Yeah, and I think Nick Nurse is going to help him immensely do that. Mm. And also, to just be more efficient in the playoffs. He had the largest drop-off in terms of points per game in NBA history this past season. And I think because Nick Nurse knows him so well, in actuality, Joel's either the worst or the second worst points per game against any team in the NBA has come against the Raptors. So I think Nick Nurse is going to be able to understand every single type of defense that Joel is going to play or going to see, and how they could be effective against it, not just him as an individual, but him as a team. I really like Nick Nurse going to Philadelphia, for the purposes of Joel Embiid being the best version of a basketball player that he could be.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's going to be weird for Raptor fans seeing Nick Nurse on. Oh, now this suddenly hurts. Now
I understand.
I'm a little bit sports sad. Actually, sticking with Philly for a second, if Harden goes to Houston, is that just kind of him sending the message that, listen, you know, winning is great, but comfort, ease, and money is better?
Yeah, if he does it, I'm going to be very disappointed in him as a basketball player, because the opportunity in Houston, while they might be a better team and while they do have a lot of money and they do have young players to potentially make a significant upgrade with their new head coach, I would still be very much disappointed in James Harden, and I would say to myself, you're not intent on actually trying to win an NBA championship. And that's totally fine. If he decides he loves Houston as a city, mm-hmm. he wants to cash out as much as he can, it is what it is. But there's a different level of respect as a basketball viewer, as a fan of the sport, that I would have to give him if he turns down the opportunity to yeah. play with a championship head coach and a big man who's one of the best five players in the NBA.
Yeah, and no one's besmirching him as a human being, but just as a sports fan, you know, it's funny. Our relationship with teams and games and players, so much of it's based on emotion. And if he decides to go to Houston, you're like, wait a minute. You don't. It feels like you don't want to win it as much as someone else. For instance, like with Nikola Jokic, I was wondering about it. Like, I think a lot of us were a little bit bummed out, and I know he's celebrating the parade more and showing more emotion. But as sports fans, when you finally win a championship for the first time, all we want is to see, you know, players react like Jamal Murray and everyone freak out and be in tears and be emotional. And Jokic treated it like it was, you know, Wednesday and he got to go home 5 minutes early. Like, there's something about it, I think, as sports fans. I feel like we're all just a little bit bummed out. We want to see more emotion.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I felt the same way. I was definitely caught off guard by Nikola Jokic's responses to, you know, even just the questions and on how happy he might be. But with that being said, one of the things that Danny has always told me is you never want to get too high, never want to get too low, and it keeps you at your best level of focus. There is a world where maybe this disposition that Jokic has helps him perform at a high level. I mean, if you watch him on the court, do you ever feel like he makes a mistake? Yeah,
never.
He might miss a shot or two, but
never.
It never feels like he makes a mistake. It never feels like he gets rushed. He always moves at his speed and always does the right thing, and maybe that's because he doesn't take the game as seriously as maybe we would hope. Maybe it allows him to be even keel and perform at his best. At this point, I can't knock the results.
No.
Two-time MVP, finals MVP, won it pretty comfortably. However he gets down is however he wants to get down. But as a fan of basketball, it does catch me a bit off guard. And it does, I can't lie to you, it does make me a bit worried about what type of conditioning or what type of skill level he'll come back with next season. Because it doesn't seem like it's a burning desire within him.
Oh, no. It's weird. And you're right. Like I'm being selfish about how I want him to react because it just feeds my sports happy. But then on one level, and it's funny, I was thinking about it when you hear the quotes about how, you know, basketball is not the most important thing to him. When I hear that from almost any other athlete, I'm like, oh, that's a red flag. But with him, it feels like, oh, you're a really grounded individual because he's done all the winning individually. He's done all the winning on a team basis. And it's like, yeah, it's not the most important thing. Part of me wants him to say, no, it is the most important thing. And then the other side part of me is like, oh, what a grounded fella you are.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Remember, the you know, fans and media alike were crucifying Giannis Antetokounmpo for the same thing after the end of the first round, when he basically had those type of same sentiments. At the end of the day, though, when you win, there's really nothing to argue with. And obviously Giannis has won at a high level before, and Jokic just did it now. So, hey, whatever gets the job done,
whatever gets the job done. What are you moving over or moving on now from the end of the NBA season? The draft is coming up, and now the summer of sports speculation begins officially. Thoughts on, and I don't think anyone's shocked by Bradley Beal, say there might be that they're exploring a trade if Washington is going full rebuild. Your thoughts on where the best spot would be for Bradley Beal?
Best spot for Bradley Beal, I believe, will be the Miami Heat. And I believe that's because Damian Lillard does not seem intent on leaving Portland. So I would say the Miami Heat would be a great opportunity for Bradley Beal. As we watch the NBA Finals, as great as a basketball player as Jimmy Butler is, he is just not necessarily the person you want to trust to be your number one scorer. He just doesn't have that skill set. He's not an explosive scorer from the three-point range, heavily reliant upon getting to the free throw line. And you saw, once he saw a defender that was as athletic or more athletic than him, that was wise and didn't foul him, that person being Aaron Gordon, he really wasn't able to be as effective as he wanted to be. He was bigger than Drew Holiday in the first round. That's why he would tell them that he owned him, even in games that they were trailing. But as each series went on, you start to realize Jimmy is so reliant upon the free throw line that if you just were disciplined enough not to send him there, and if you had the strength to match him up when he does his post-up game, you could really curtail his effectiveness That's why Bradley Beal, a great scorer to every single part of the floor, would immensely help not just the Miami Heat, but it would also change the perception of Bradley Beal, who's pretty much, feels like he's been absent from the NBA conversation for the past 2-3 years.
Yeah, no, you're right. He has been, never got out of the second round. I think to me there's some red flags, not just the contract, but some injuries. But hey, listen, we're here speculating. Will Siakam get moved? Will there be a deal with them in Portland? And OG Anunoby's on the final year of his contract. The reckless speculation has begun. I'm here for all of it. Harrison, first off, appreciate you joining the show. Where can people find you? Where can they find you and Danny Green?
So you can find us on, you can find me on Twitter at Harrison Stanford. The Twitter account for the podcast is at Green Room Inside. We also have a YouTube channel, and it's available, you know, on any podcast feed, Inside the Green Room with Danny Green. I will say this, though.
Yeah.
I also do feel like the Raptors need to move on from Pascal Siakam. They have a great opportunity to reset. When every other franchise in the NBA is trying to, they can go leaps and bounds further than any other team with their reset plan if they decide to go that route.
I agree, and I liked how you lowered your voice a little bit because Raptor fans are really passionate, and a lot of them are very protective. And let me just say to all of them listening, the move of Siakam is not based on his skill or talent. He is an all-star, but he's 29 years old. He's 8 years older than Scottie Barnes. He's 4 or 5 years older than OG Anunoby. It makes sense, and the idea is to try to find that true, legit, real super-duper star versus just that that star, and maybe that's Scoot Henderson. So, Harrison, I'm with you on it, but yes, we kind of have to whisper that.
Yes, for sure. And again, if he plays really well next year, then he makes himself eligible for the Supermax extension. And now you're asking yourself, do you want to pay Pascal Siakam a Supermax when the team is not necessarily a top four team in the East? It just doesn't make a lot of financial sense either. I think it has to be done.
Yeah, I agree. And that might come up in the next week and a half from now. Harrison, appreciate. Follow him on Twitter, @HarrisonSanford. Thanks for joining the show today.
My pleasure. Take care.
Yeah, you as well.